Living in Love, Part 6, Wisdom. Enjoy it.
The sun was shining. Everywhere around us, blue skies and a gentle breeze. Parents and teenagers with hugs and handshakes had all come to the annual pool party. There was enough food to feed an army, of course. We had avocados, guacamole, watermelon. We had hamburgers, hot dogs with all the fixings. And of course, we had Dr. Pepper. Many of the youth were laughing and playing in the pool. The others were, there was a big football game going on, and then there was a basketball game. But the conversations, as I sat down and listened, conversations buzzed in the air. Conversations like, how are you? What's your summer plans? You're going there? That's amazing. No matter, you can do it. That's tough that you're struggling with that. These buzzwords in the air proved to me that love was there. That community was being built amongst these parents and these teenagers. We were having some church at that pool party. We were having real life vulnerable conversations with each other. And I sat back trying to take it all in, trying to kind of take a snapshot of that beautiful moment. And there came Martin Zendejas. I knew he had a question for me because it's Martin Zendejas. So he sat down next to me and he said, hey Dale, what's it take to become a pastor? So I described to him that in the Methodist Church, you've got to have a bachelor's degree and then a master's degree, a master's in divinity. Then you have to have psychological tests, interviews, more papers. And finally, one day, a long time away from when you started, you become officially a pastor. His response was, wow, really? My response was, yeah, but there's lots of other opportunities for you if that's not what you're into. And then he says, did you do all that? So I said, yep, just about. And I also did a partial, almost all my PhD in New Testament theology. And that's when it happened. He looked at me, the wrinkle on his forehead, and he said to me, Dale, you could have been something, man. Today, I want to talk to you about wisdom, especially God's multifaceted wisdom. And we're going to kind of slow down. If we have been following the letter of Ephesians, we've been listening to our early Christian brothers and sisters trying to wrestle and grapple with the message they had to teach us. And if you remember, we had those mountaintop verbs, and then we had those death traps, those valleys and places we go through. And last week, the cross in all its beauty, according to early Christians. But this week we find there's a calm to the letter's action. There's this pause. And so we pause. And we're going to look at one verse, verse 10. And we're just going to break it down with one another. And the verse goes like this. Right now, through the church, God's multifaceted wisdom is being made known to the rulers and the authorities in the heavenly realms. So, we start with God's multifaceted wisdom. The Greek word that this translates is ha polupoikilos. Yes, a mouthful. It is a hapax legomenon. I know you're all dying to know what that means. The only time this adjective is used in the New Testament is right here. This word, multifaceted, it has a range of meaning. It means variety. It means multidimensional. It means elastic. It means varied in multiple, manifold ways. So it has this realm of meaning, which I chose to translate it, multifaceted. It's like a gem that has all these different faces to it. It's like a diamond with its brilliant facets that surround it. The verse tells us that it is wisdom, God's multifaceted wisdom. Now, interpreter after interpreter have talked about what this means, but what it basically comes down to is that it is creative, original, always dynamically at work in the life of the world. A one and only original that keeps dynamically working in our life. And when I think about God's multifaceted wisdom, I can't stop thinking about Betty Clifford. Betty Clifford is someone throughout her long life who has had to reinvent herself in different ways. She has been used by God in a variety of different settings. For 22 years, she was in the United States Navy and she served as a nurse. And then when she left the nurse and came back to Rifle, part of her time she spent 6 years writing weekly articles about the history of Rifle, informing us on this great place and all the stories that it has. And then also at that time, 15 years, she spent as a nurse to the Grand Mesa Camp. Teenagers after teenagers being touched by her loving presence. But then in 2003, she suffered from a stroke. But that didn't get her down. She rehabilitated herself. She worked hard. God's presence energized her. And she got up. She leads and is a big part of our missions committee here. She continues to serve the community at Lift Up and through homeless shelters. She is an awesome example of God's multifaceted wisdom at work. The essence of wisdom is love. Love that is working forth in Betty's life to the countless thousands upon thousands and millions of people that she's influenced. But the thing that stands out most in my mind is, when I first came here, Betty said to me, you're coming with me to the retirement homes once a month. Awesome invitation, right? So every month, Betty and I get in the car and we visit the VA, and we visit Edie Moore, and we visit Crossroads, and Betty walks up and down those halls. Now you have to understand, Betty's not just there to see the people that are in the home. Betty has a ministry to all the nurses. Betty has a ministry to all the administrative people there. Everyone knows Betty Clifford. And with every step she takes, it's like love is being brought into these buildings. Hope is being brought into these buildings. God's multifaceted wisdom at work in our world. The passage tells us that right now, God's multifaceted wisdom is being made known. There's a sense of urgency in early Christians' understanding of the world right now. And this right now, this multifaceted, is being made known. There's a sense that something new and fresh and wonderful is happening in the world. A new world is breaking forth through our life. This old world with its pains and its sorrows is dying. This new world with its hope and its love is bursting forth. When I think about God's multifaceted wisdom, I can't stop thinking about what happened this week in this very building. We celebrated the life of Jean Hollenbeck. Well, one unique thing about the celebration is that this church has decided every time there's a funeral, we're going to have a luncheon or a dinner. It doesn't matter how many people we can fit into that building. We're going to feed as many as possible. And you would not believe the amount of hands, the amount of food that goes into feeding over 100 people. And I remember the conversations with a group of them, faces that are all around here now. Many of you gave food to feed this family and their friends, to feed people in our community. The questions were like, I don't know how we're going to set this up this time, but somehow we set it up. I don't know where all the food's going to come from, but somehow the food came. And guess what? Our community was served. God's multifaceted wisdom met the needs of the precious people in this community. The verse goes on, and it says that God's multifaceted wisdom is being made known to the rulers and the authorities in the heavenly realms. Now, we've seen this language before in Ephesians. This language to us seems kind of strange, but we saw in chapter 2, the rulers and authorities. We saw that there are two ways that early Christians understood. The ways of the world, and then there are the ways of the rulers of the age. Do you remember that? The sort of undercurrent that drives us away from God's way, the third way that parts the water. So we have this amazingly, we talked about it in terms of river. We talked about it in terms of the eddy that traps us and the undercurrent that draws us away and God that guides us down that river. And in the second part, in the heavenly realms, we saw this language in chapter 1 when it said, blessed are you who have been given the blessing of every spiritual blessing in the heavenly realms. Early Christians understood that the world had different realms or different places. But what they declare here, all of the world is God's. God is going to destroy all those forces of evil, all those forces of pain, all those forces against love. God is the creator and sustainer of life. And with our multifaceted wisdom, we destroy bit by bit the roots and decays of a world that is dying and make way for the new world of hope and love for every single person. When I think about God's multifaceted wisdom, I can't stop thinking about Jerry Schaefer. Jerry has been a part of our church and his wonderful family for the last 3 months. Now, Jerry was the track coach at Rifle High School for the last 5 years. And what's fantastic about Jerry is that as I sat with him and heard the stories of what he's done at the Rifle track team, it's incredible. Not only has the track team grown, not only did they win a state championship this year, not only did he win the coach of the year, not in the county, but in the state of Colorado. But Jerry also does something else. He told me this. He said, Dale, the track team is like my family. My family knows that they come in and out of our house. I have talked to at least 20 teenagers in our community that will tell you that Jerry Schaefer believed in him or her. Jerry Schaefer offered them the opportunity to be involved in something bigger than themselves. Because the truth about being a teenager, especially in this moment in history, is that you can live life in a kind of holding pattern, waiting to get out of high school, because somehow magically real life starts when you turn 18. But what Jerry did was say, no, if I take serious Christianity, life is now. Love is now. My life matters right here, no matter what age I am, no matter an infant or in your elderly age. God is always around us, always breaking forth newness of life. So Jerry invited these teenagers, and more and more of them came because Jerry didn't care. It didn't matter if you were the best track athlete or the worst. All are part of a team. All make the team better for everyone else. God's multifaceted wisdom at work outside of what we would traditionally think of the church. Then the verse goes this way. It says, right now, through the church, God's multifaceted wisdom is being made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly realms. So early Christians highlighted this part right here, through the church. Now we have to remember that this word church to early Christians, remember, they were a small group, a minority group in the ancient Mediterranean world. They didn't have buildings. They didn't have hundreds of people that came. But this word, church, it comes from two Greek words, ek and kaleo. Ek is to come out from. Kaleo is to be called, to be welcomed, to be a part of something. So ek kaleo translates ekklesia. Ekklesia translates church. Church is the countercultural community that follows the way of Jesus. So church is the people that gather together to say, boy, I sure need a lot of hope. I sure need a lot of love. I need direction in my life. And they focus themselves, just like a track team, on being their best self, on following the way of Jesus, the way of love and compassion and service to all. So church is not about the building. Church is not even about Sunday mornings. It's bigger than Sunday mornings. Church is about that countercultural group of people who've come together and say, let's imagine what this world could be if it were a better place for all. God's multifaceted wisdom. Right now, through the church, God's multifaceted wisdom is being made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly realms. By our lives, we are literally shaking the ground of the old way of life and bringing forth new fruit, new vegetation, new life to this incredible world that we live in. We've finally come to a place in Christianity when we have realized it's not all about the otherworldly. It's about this moment. It's about becoming all God wants us to be here and now, and giving the gift to our kids and to our grandkids and on and on and on. You know, you have those moments where you wish you could kind of have a take back or a redo, or you could get in a time machine and go back to that year and a half ago where Martin Zendejas sat right next to me. Well, you can't. So what would I say if I could actually respond to Martin that, Deo, you could have been something, man? This is what I would say to Martin Zendejas. I would say, Martin, every Greek verb that I studied, every Hebrew verb, every test I took, every paper I wrote, every psychological examination I took, every interview, every church I ever worked at, everything I ever did was worth nothing if it wasn't about investing into your life. Of you seeing the possibilities of a new life. Of you seeing the possibilities of being used by God to transform this world. I would tell Martin that my life was infinitely successful if I influenced you one inch on your great journey through life. If my life could tell you, Martin, how important you are, how valuable you are, how loved you are, how worthy of life you are, and how much your life can make a difference. That's what I would tell Martin Zendejas. And I've told him 100 times, he's probably sick of it. But what's interesting, though, as we conclude today, is this is verse 10. We had 9 verses that preceded it, and then 3 that follow it. And in those 9, Paul is in prison. I asked Daryl Meisner if he'd lock me up for a day, and he said, no problem. So the picture this week is me in our city jail here. And there's this sense when you're in the jail cell, I had never been there before, and there's this sense of, it's thick, it's weighty. And you think about all of those early Christians who suffered in prison cells. You think about Paul, who in this passage is in prison. You think about Martin Luther King Jr. You think about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who is in that German prison. And you think about the weight of this calling to be God's multifaceted wisdom. Now, not all of us will go to prison for our faith, but we all understand that suffering. We all understand that to say yes to relationships and no to the system, to say yes to love and no to hate, to say yes to peace and no to anxiety, there's a cost. There is a cost to our discipleship to Jesus. But then, what's so beautiful is we weigh the cost. We know that it costed so much. But at the end of chapter 3, at the very end, the passage burst forth into this praise. And it's hard for us to get our minds around this incredible juxtaposition of, Paul, you're in prison. But there's this joy that what he went to prison for, that what he suffered for, the Martin Zendejas's and the other kids and people and children and grandchildren that will be influenced by you are worth all the suffering, all the brokenheartedness that you go through is worth it for a new world of love to come about for all. And so the passage says this, to God, the one who can make the impossible possible, beyond our imagination. To this God, whose energy force works within us, be glory and praise and honor forever and ever in the church throughout all generations. Amen. So we pause here and invite you to look at the discipleship challenge for the summer, but more importantly, ask you to take a deep breath and to remember the joy and high calling that is yours. I have one more song from Tim Koons to get us ready for him next week, and this is a song called Good Days. And at first I was like, this doesn't really fit, but these are good days where God's multifaceted wisdom is being known to the world.